The following is a presentation of Open for Business, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's conference for business students and business professionals at the Urbana 06 Missions Convention, held in St. Louis, December 2006. For more information, please visit ofb.intervarsity.org.
Welcome. I'm going to give you guys a quick introduction to our speaker, and I'm going to pray for him, and then we're going to get started. Tom Buckles is here. He's associate professor of marketing at Biola's executive MBA program. He has a lot of experience in the business world. He's been a part of a couple different startups, and he's worked in a lot of different secular universities. In the past 5 years, he's made about 5 years ago, he made a transition to Biola because he is really passionate about pursuing this business as missions thing and looking at what could MBA education be if we're looking at the whole person, if it's not just about profits, if it's not just about money. And so he's working on a couple different book projects, and he's working on some curriculum, and he has a lot of great things to share with us. So go ahead and welcome Tom Buckles at this point. Okay, I'm just going to say a quick prayer for Tom, and then we'll get started. Heavenly Father, we just come humbly before you. We're excited to be here. We're excited about all the great people you brought in. We're especially excited to have Tom here. All his years of faithful service have been awesome, and it's exciting to see the new directions that he's going in the past few years, and we're looking forward to learning from him. I just pray that you'll be with him as he speaks, and be with us, and just open our minds to the creative possibilities you might have for us and our futures as we listen to Tom. Thanks. Amen.
Thank you. Good evening. Did I turn this on? Yes, I did. I did turn it on. Can you hear me okay? I'm not used to using a mic, so I like to move around, so I'll move back and forth around through. So there we go. That sounds better. Okay. Yes, next slide. I like some people just. How many of you flew here? I just flew in this afternoon. I got about 2:33 o'clock this afternoon. Okay, and did you have a smooth flight? No problems. Airports are clear. No, got your seat okay? Right. Okay. Next slide, please. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming. There's a lot of great speakers tonight. Some of them I know. Ken Humphries is speaking tonight, and a good friend of mine down the hall, John Beckett, speaking as well, and Dwight Nordstrom. So a lot of great people, so I really appreciate you taking time to come and hear me talk instead of more of an academic guy as opposed to a business guy. I just arrived this afternoon, and some of the experience, fly a little bit, not as much as I used to, but if you could just click on that for a minute. Here's a little video you may have experienced. So, just give you an idea in terms of what flying can be like in holiday time. Next slide, please. Again. There we go. So just a brief bio about myself. As mentioned, I have a PhD in marketing from Arizona State University. And what I want to just mention a little bit about, for me, what's important is that my undergraduate education is in economics. And in particular, it's an area that in the 70s was called radical economics. And for those of you who know anything about that, none of you don't think of that old, actually. So, but that is a politically correct term for Marxism. Okay. And as it turns out, my senior thesis advisor is now one of the leading political economists in the country. He's got a chair position at Yale. And I say that because I come at marketing from a very different perspective as opposed to one that says marketing is the answer to everything. I have a very critical eye towards marketing and what it really can contribute to the marketplace and contribute to the world, and in particular from a more of a social perspective as well. So I don't want to sound jaundiced. I don't want to sound as if I'm very critical of marketing, and I am in some areas, and I think hopefully some of you are, whatever area you go into, you'll also be critical and won't take everything 100% and take a grain of salt. I have an MBA as well, and in the middle of the 70s, there wasn't a lot of places to go because of a huge recession going on. Again, most of you aren't old enough, but there were lines waiting to get gasoline. When I was growing up buying gas, it was 29 cents a gallon. Okay, and it jumped to 75 cents a gallon. Everybody had a heart attack. People are actually digging holes in their backyard and putting 500 gallon tanks in their backyard and getting gasoline and putting it in that tank so they could have gas on the weekends. They had on even days, you can get gas, but not odd days, those kind of things, and natural gas. There's all sorts of weird stuff. So that's sort of my background. I've got a PhD. I did a lot of work with NASA and defense and some things, which was rather interesting. I've taught, as was mentioned, I've taught at a number of universities in Biola the last 5-6 years. And I went there primarily because MBA program, did a lot of executive education domestically, internationally. And what I continued to come across was the fact that I was only teaching the person up here, basically, and a lot of my own experiences and things I've dealt with, and not really the hard part, not really the spiritual at all. And the last, according to Biola, I was teaching at a Catholic university, which is rather interesting. The president of the university was a strong Catholic and actually made room on her staff so IB could have a staff person there. And she really wanted to have IB very have an active role on ministry on the campus. It was rather interesting. And as it turned out, the staff person there was a guy I went to college with. So that was kind of neat to get to see him a little bit. In this experience, I've started about three different companies, helped start about three different companies. One of them was very successful. Two of them weren't that successful. Two of them were, actually three of them. Two of them were actually part of .com. And we did very well, but that's another experience. Another story, which we take another hour. I won't spend the time with you. But it's an example of a product that has superior technology, but what's already available is good enough. And so no one wants to take the superior technology. And we can spend time talking about that and marketing strategies, which we'll spend a little later tonight. My Christian experience, I've been a Christian over 40 years. And again, one reason why I really wanted to be moving towards a Christian university is because I really wanted to share some of my own passion that I have for business ministry. In particular, what I have a hard time with, and a lot of you are young and don't have experience this yet, but I do a lot of consulting. I do not tell people I do consulting that I'm a Christian. Because I will automatically put a block in their way thinking, oh boy, I don't want to do this with this person. How many of you are familiar with Christian Yellow Pages? There's no Christian Yellow Pages. A lot of us use that as a directory of who not to do business with. Okay? Because we have found that a lot of Christians do not do business very professionally. And I very, very rarely do work with Christian organizations because I know that there's at least a 50% chance I will not get paid. Okay? And as a matter of fact, it's a perspective, a cultural viewpoint. And we want to talk about that. But that's a certain issue in terms of working with the Christian milieu and working within the world in terms of business perspective. So we'll talk a little bit about that tonight as well. So next slide, please. So I'm going to do a little audience research in just a few minutes. Next, please. How many of you are undergrads? Okay, next clip. And how many of you are business undergrads? Okay, not quite as many. How many of you are other undergrad? Like, okay, so what are some of your majors?
Economics,
okay. Applied or theoretical? Are you in the business school or not in the business school?
No.
Okay, so theoretical, okay. Applied is a business school economics, and you know they're really a second cousin. Who else? Any sociology, anthropology, or social work, or not social work, missions, missiology, or anything? No? So, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. You?
Computer science.
Computer science, okay. Others? I couldn't hear you, sorry. Okay, oh good, okay, great. No, good, okay. Anybody else? Any other? Yes?
Communication.
Okay, comm, okay, good. Marcom, or just communications, or film, TV, media, or?
Speech
comm, okay, good, all right, great. MBA students here? Any MBA students? 1, 2, 3? Okay, good. Well, hopefully we'll have a little bit to talk about. Next clip, please. Any post-MBAs? Any MBA grads? Okay, good. All right. Yeah, sorry, students versus grads. Okay, and then the last one, actually two more clicks. One more. Those of you, how many MBA grads do we have? I'm sorry. This one? Two? Okay, so where are you working? What industries?
I'm a faculty member.
Okay.
20 years in the industry.
Okay, doing what? Doing...
semiconductors,
okay, great.
Management consulting, and coffee.
Okay, cool, all right, good. That makes a lot of semiconductors and coffee, that makes sense, yeah. Well, they're all granules, sand, you know, and coffee being good.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Ma'am?
International.
Okay, good. Anybody else? Somebody else had their hand raised? Yes? No, you don't admit to it. Okay. Next slide. Okay, and one more clip. Any entrepreneurs in here? I'm sorry. Your other... Oh, what was it? Oh, you do? Really? In Texas?
In Texas.
Yeah. Good for you. Okay, great. Well, I'd love to talk about some stuff. It's interesting what they've done down there. Yeah, over there. Any entrepreneurs? Cool. Okay. Doing what?
What are your friends on business?
I can't hear. Oh, this is kind of loud.
What are you doing?
Business? Wow. What area? What industry?
Bakersfield.
Oh, really? Bakersfield? I know where that is, actually. I grew up about 40 miles from there. Doing what?
Restaurants.
Okay, cool. Great. And are you first, second, third generation?
I'm probably the original entrepreneur.
Okay. Okay, cool. Anybody else? I'm sorry. Good. Okay. So, yes, I have a hand raised? Yes.
I don't know. Window washing business.
Really? Good for you. Commercial or retail? Consumer or commercial business, or both? Both, okay. Okay, anybody else? Okay, entrepreneurs. You know, there's entrepreneur is? Yes, no? Anybody not know the difference before we move on? Okay, entrepreneur is an individual who is an entrepreneur within a large organization. Okay, so they have entrepreneurial mindset within a large organization. And some organizations actually try to encourage that, others try to stifle it. So it's all right. Next slide, please. Okay, so just a few objectives I want to have today. One, just sort of some important questions for BAM and regarding marketing and BAM. Next, please. Build some awareness about some things. Next, provide some examples. And unfortunately, next, please, I don't have any answers for you. What I really want to do is I want to provide you an opportunity to maybe think about some things. And what I really would like to encourage you to do is ask questions. I can do the I talk, you listen thing. That's okay. But I'd rather have you ask questions and interrupt at any time. Okay? And let me ask you some questions, and hopefully somebody will actually be awake enough to answer them or try to provide some response to that. Okay? So that's sort of what I want to try to do today. And given your backgrounds, I'll try to weave in some of what I want to talk about and some of your own background. So, okay. Next slide, please. Okay, so marketing worldview. What is marketing? We'll talk about that in just a minute, but I want to put up a couple of quotes for you, first of all. First one, please. And I hear it one more time. This was a quote by Peter Drucker, Price Management, in 1954. Okay, whoops, there we go. Okay, just page up twice, please. Upper, here we go, thank you. Now, marketing, a lot of people view it as sales, advertising, talk about it in a few minutes, but I really wanted to get across the fact that marketing is beyond that, all right? And with Mr. Drucker, you're all familiar with Peter Drucker, right? Okay, so this is a guy who does not have an MBA, does not have a PhD, and is probably one of the most widely revered in the world business practitioners and consultants. Okay. So, next, and then two more. Hey, yeah. Marketing is too important for the marketing department. And this was something by David Packard said, who was a co-founder, co-founder of HP, so this is like 20 years ago. Now, Dave Packard is a guy who actually transformed Hewlett-Packard three different times after he retired because it actually was going in the doldrums. And Hewlett-Packard is a great example of a company that was, we call, product-driven. That is, if we build a better product, people will buy it. And that's because they're all engineers. Okay, the one lady is a mechanical engineer. That's a problem, as opposed to looking for the marketplace and saying, what are the solutions that need to meet people's needs, consumers' needs, and try to figure out if we can do that or not profitably. And what he said, and I think this is very appropriate, but it's more of a later, is marketing is more important than the marketing department. We can't just leave it to those folks, because those folks will mess it up. Okay. And by the way, if you want, I'd be happy to send you a copy of the slides. If you want, email. I have an email address at the end, and you can. I'd be happy to email it to you. Okay, so marketing is not simply the marketing department. It's not simply the guy or gal that has a big M on their forehead. Okay, next slide. So, what is marketing? Next slide. No, not yet. Next slide. There we go. So what do you think marketing is? I sort of gave it away a little bit already, but what do you think marketing is? How would you define it? Anybody? It's not a quiz. It's all great, okay? It's not a salvation issue. I'm sorry. What's that?
Awareness,
okay. Well, what marketing is awareness or it creates awareness? Okay, creates awareness. Okay, what else?
Yeah. Forming the brand and forming an identity for the brand.
Okay, so we create brands and create identities for brands, okay? Yeah.
Determining what needs exist in society and how best to meet those needs.
Okay. Okay, so what we're looking at is what our consumer needs and wants, and determining whether or not our company can create a product, a good or a service to meet that need or want. Okay, that's also very true. What else?
Yeah.
Okay, so finding points of difference between my product and somebody else's product and see if it's significant enough to actually create in the market. All right. Can you go back, please, one? Page up. Thank you. Anybody else? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Creating the illusion of a need, so the customer thinks that they need something to buy.
Okay. Yeah, we can have a discussion about that,
yeah.
Because I don't think that's true at all. But that's okay. There are a lot of people who do think that's true. Okay, and that's really important, because one of the things we find out in marketing, if you're really good at marketing, one of the things you have to understand is that perception is reality. Okay, so his perception of marketing being that, and whether he believes it or not, I mean, I don't know if that's really true or not. He may have just been trying to be funny, but or I'm sure he believes part of that. But a lot of people do believe that. Okay, that marketing creates needs. Some people might argue, well, it uncovers needs. How many of you would have thought that your mother, how many of you use the microwave? How many of you watch TV? Okay. Now, Jack Warner, Warner Brothers, okay, one of the three brothers who started Warner Brothers, in 1962, I think it was, 52, anyway, somewhere 50, 60 years ago, okay, said that who in the world, because he made movies, Warner Brothers made movies, and he said, who in the world is going to sit in the living room watching a pint box 2 or 3 hours a day? So that's not going to happen. Hard, right? there was an uncovered need, and micro's the same way. Okay? We have these things that happen, and we realize that this helps us save time. Now, there's other issues involved, and some real social issues that are very important, like what this gentleman just mentioned. Yeah?
Marketing, they don't like repeat customers.
Okay, repeat customers. Right. Okay? So, next slide, please. Next click. Okay. What I think marketing is all about, really, is marketing needs to keep their finger on the pulse of the marketplace, needs to understand the customer, what the customer really needs or wants. Okay. And what's really important and what is sort of implicit in his statement is that there's a difference between needs and wants. Very big difference between that. Okay. And how do we determine that? Secondly, it's finding the future, okay? And that is, marketing is when we're looking through the marketplace, looking through customers' needs and wants, it's finding the future. Where are we moving towards? And that's why segmentation is very important, creating identities for brands is very important. In the 70s, when I was in my MBA program, the whole idea of building brands and an identity was a brand new thought. Today, it's just assumed, okay? Now, one of the things we have, this gets back to the gentleman's comment here about needs and wants. If you can, some people view marketing as sales or advertising only. It's much bigger than that. If you can click on that black box, this is one reason why. Hopefully you won't be offended by this ad. This is an actual, this is a comment.
Ice cream maker, thanks, Jim, to weaponry. Now, what have we got today, guys?
Well, today we have got the villain's favorite. A veteran of more than 75 wars, it's the AK-47 assault rifle. Now, so come over here, let me show you this in its full splendor. Here it is. Beautiful. Now, we have 10,000 of these in secret locations outside the UK to sell today.
I might have to treat myself to one, I think. Now, the phone lines are open, folks, so give us a call, and if you call within the hour, there's a free gift with every purchase. A year's worth of free ammunition.
So, how do you pay? Well, we'll accept hard cash, dollars through offshore accounts, or even accept diamonds.
Cliff, we're not going to get into trouble for this, are we?
You don't need to worry about getting into trouble, because surprisingly, Sue, there are rather convenient loopholes in the rules governing arms trade around the world, so you needn't worry, you won't get in trouble.
Oh, that's good to know, Cliff, and it's good for business as well.
if you are sitting home and thinking, is an assault rifle difficult to use, then you need not worry. What do you think child soldiers are using in the likes of Liberia and the Democratic Republic of Congo?
Not one of these.
They are. They're using AK-47s, right?
Well, I tell you what, we've got Sam in the studio now, haven't we? And he's going to do a demo. Okay, Sam, so in your own time, whenever you're ready. Wow, that is seriously impressive. Now, if you like what you've just seen there, then get phoning. I personally think that is very, very impressive.
Look, head, lungs, heart, alliterated, fantastic.
So guys, if you like the look of what you've just seen, then make sure you pick up that phone now, the number's on your screen.
That's right, don't miss out. Okay, we'll be back shortly, but what's coming up to?
Oh, well, we're going back to Jim now. He's been joined by Val, and I believe they're modelling some very attractive little red dressing gowns.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, so you can see, and this is a parody, of course, but there's a lot of bats out there, and this gets back to, I mean, who needs an AK-47? I mean,
welcome and, back.
And,
so
oops, you need to click. There we go. Click one more time.
Welcome back. So,
You like this idea? hit the space bar, I think. Or hit, there we go. Now page up a couple. There we go. There we go. Thank you. Page up again, please. One more time. Yeah, we go. Okay. So what we have here basically is an example of an ad that really is selling a product, a good in this case, that really has no practical significance to anybody in here, hopefully. Unless you go dove hunting or something, maybe, I don't know. But I think the fact of the matter is people view marketing as being this kind of thing. In reality, that's just part of marketing. But I think what really marketing is about is keeping the finger on the pulse of the marketplace and finding the future. And really, there are two rules to marketing, okay? Two rules. Next clip, please. One more. The first one is know who your customers are. Okay. Guess what? That's not as easy as you think it is. Okay. And the second rule is listen to your customers. Okay. Just click. There you go. Listen to your customers. Now, football, everybody knows what football is, right? American football, not European football. Okay, American football. Right? Now, Vince Lombardi was considered one of the best coaches ever alive, etc. He had two rules in football. Block and tackle. That's all it was about. Blocking and tackling. You block so your runner can score. You tackle the other person so you can't score. Bless you. Okay. Well, marketing is sort of the same way. It's really on two rules. Know who your customers are. Listen to your customers. But guess what? Most companies don't do this very well. And I'm going to talk a little bit at the very end about how we as Picket Christians in a banner environment have actually an edge and how we can do this even better. Okay. So I want you to keep this in mind. We'll come back to this a little bit later. Next slide, please. So question number one. Next slide. How do I know who my customers are? How do you think we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, one way is to do research. Okay, both primary and secondary research. What else? Yes?
I guess, firstly, know your own resources.
Okay. So one of the things, if you're familiar with this concept, the biggest thing in the last 10 years has been something called customer relationship management. And that's really critical. And I think one of the things we're going to do here is figure out who buys our product, our good or our service, and how do we then customize that service to that individual, that product to that individual. All right. And that's one of the reasons why the web is such a fantastic leveling field for a lot of companies, because all of a sudden you can do what we call mass customization. Okay. Anybody here, who has not been to Amazon.com? There was an Amazon, right? So when you go to Amazon, hi, Tom, last time you were here, you looked at these books. Okay. So each one of us that go to Amazon and have a different experience. That's mass customization. Okay. And that's marketing. That's probably what marketing is all about. Okay. Helping you do a better job, being more efficient, more effective about what you really want to be doing. Okay. Next slide, please. Next one. And then how do I listen to my customers? Well, believe it or not, actually talking to them. You'd be surprised how many companies do not talk to their customers. I was involved in a consulting project about 10 years ago now, and a friend of mine and I went to a company. Their software sells for between $250,000 to $500,000 a pop. Okay, major industrial software for airline traffic control management stuff. Their first product out the door, they're computer science engineers and the software engineers, and big hit. They had it made. Second product flopped miserably. when they're talking, so, well, you know, who are your top 50 customers? They didn't know. We got, so this is sort of like Abraham and the Lord at Sodom and Gomorrah. We got down, well, who's your number one customer? They didn't know. They didn't know who their customers were at all. They just simply developed products and sold in the industry. And what we're leading to here is Christians, we'll come to this a little bit later, is we didn't know who our customers are. Okay? We look at a BAM environment. All right? Next slide. So, impacting the poor for Christ in a global context, business context, as either an entrepreneur or entrepreneur. And that is, as somebody who goes out and starts a company, starts a business with themselves or with others, or is in a larger company and has entrepreneurial activities in that company. How do we do that? Next slide. So, there's a thing called the World Pyramid. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not. Okay, but we have basically, is that about 100 million people make over $20,000 a year. This is U.S. dollars. We have 2 billion between 2000 and 20,000 and 4 billion. Now, this data is about a year and a half, 2 years old, so the numbers are a little off, but usually the numbers are roughly proportionally the same. 4 billion under $2,000 a year. Now, the typical marketer is going to do what? We're going to go to the top, right? Yeah. Definitely the 20,000. And preferably there, and maybe, you know, right? But we're going to forget these folks altogether. But what's one of the biggest problems, especially in American companies, is what? Do you mean shareholder value? Right? Those of you who are business students know that. Right? And the idea is that how do you build shareholder wealth? How do you build shareholder value if you grow the company? How do you grow the company? You have to get new customers to sell more product, right? So one of the things that I'm asking you to consider is, what about this 6 billion people here? Now, this might play into the thing about the question is, well, we're selling Barbie dolls to people in India who only make $180 a year, and a $30 Barbie doll is a sixth of their income. So how are we going to do that? We're not talking about that at all. That's not kind of thing we're talking about at all. We're looking at here is we have great disparity in income. We actually here in the United States as well. It's just not simply overseas. It's for the United States. Those of you who study sociology or marketing or economic or urban economics, etc., you know that when you look at population placement in terms of a large metropolitan area, we know that people who are poor don't have access to transportation. They have bus, they have MetroLink. In Southern California, we have nothing. We have a MetroLink now and a bus system that's okay. But it was trashed about 100 years, not quite 80 years ago, by some people who wanted to have some other things. They didn't want to have a mass transit system. Okay. It was a greed thing. Okay. So what we know is that people who are poor, they can't travel outside the area to buy groceries or get services. So guess what happens? Their goods and services that they purchase are more expensive than what you and I pay for, because they're trapped in a geographical location. They can't get out. It's too difficult. How are they going to, again, unless they steal the grocery cart from the grocery store and take home all the groceries, they go back and forth every day, every couple days. Okay. The question I have for you is, from a BAM perspective, what's the likelihood, what's the possibility, what are the possibilities of looking at opportunities, looking at what we call disruptions in the marketplace, looking for those points of difference where maybe we can actually start building infrastructure. Why do you think these people, one reason why these people are so poor? I'll try to trip over that. Why is one reason why they're so poor? If you study, who's IED person? Who is the IED, International Economic Development? I'm not going to pick on you. It's okay. I won't single you out. But one of the things, and hopefully you studied this, is the fact that one of the major problems in economic development is infrastructure. Okay. In the 80s, the Soviet Union, okay, this is before the walking of, when there was still a Soviet Union, grew a lot more potatoes than Idaho could ever think of. Okay, I couldn't even imagine. They couldn't get on the market. And the reason why is because they sat in railroad cars and rotted because they had no means of knowing where the cars were and where the cars were supposed to go and how to get them there. Now, you may think that's a problem for a country like Russia, Soviet Union, who has, you know, a lot of government problems there. But guess what? It's one reason why Kmart declared bankruptcy about 10 years ago. Because they had semi-tractor trailer rigs in Los Angeles area, about 5,000 of them, and they didn't know where they were supposed to go. That's why Walmart was taken to the cleaners, because Walmart has an incredibly sophisticated supply chain management system. Kmart had none. So my point here is that as Christians, if we look at, and this is mission context, we look at opportunities and building infrastructure and supply chain, for example, that gives us an opportunity to think about how we get an impact, one, both as a marketplace entrepreneur, but secondly, an impact for the kingdom, which we'll talk about in a few more minutes. Okay, I'm trying to build a case up here for a few minutes, a little bit. What else can we do? How many of you have gone on mission trips overseas, either Central America, South America, or Eastern Europe, wherever? Okay, so what are some of the things you've done? Yeah?
Construction.
Of what? Homes or churches or hospitals?
Like homes for pastors.
Okay. What else? I'm sorry?
Relief work
like what?
Tsunami
stuff? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Language teaching?
Help improve quality of coffee.
Okay, sure. Now, one of my favorite examples is, and I think Ken Eldred was talking about this one time, about the fact that his church was thinking of sending money over to help a village, send a team over to build a well down the fresh water. His comment was, well, why would we want to do that? What we really should do is we should actually fund somebody there to start a well-building company. Train them how to build wells so they can actually drill for water there. And then what they'll do is we'll hire people to help them build wells, which will then grow the company, which means people are making money, which means they'll actually increase their standard of living a little bit. And guess what happens usually? It sort of spreads. Somebody else is like, hey, I'm going to do that. And if the person is very entrepreneurial, what they'll do is they'll fund that individual for 25% of the company or whatever the appropriate amount might be. That's how good negotiator they are. Okay. And guess what happens? It creates a whole different dynamic as opposed to Americans or Europeans or Koreans or whoever coming over and doing good stuff and helping them build a well for water. And guess what? We got one well for water, and that's it. So that's kind of what we're talking about here, kind of things we're talking about, is how can we do this? And we'll cut this back around in a few more minutes. Next slide, please. Now, here's high-cost economy of the poor. Now, this is all in India. Dwarvi is a shanty town of about 1 million people outside Mumbai. Warden Road is just also in the more urban area. It's a fairly middle class area, population. Okay. One of the things that we talk about is interest rates, right? And why would Citibank or Deutsche Bank or GE Capital want to go over there? And we say, well, they're charging 60%, 70% interest on their loans. Oh, that's terrible. We only pay 18% or 22%. That's terrible. Well, guess what they're really paying? In Dwarvi, they're paying 600 to 1,000%. Why? Because they're poor. Why? Because they don't have visible means of support. There's no collateral. Maybe some sugar little cow or something else, but that's about it. There's nothing there. And so this is where we get the IED. And you guys are all familiar with microenterprise and microenterprise development, those kinds of microloans, and $50, $100, $1,500. World Vision is really moving into that a lot. The larger end, $1,500 to $2,000. Okay, that's a lot of money for microenterprise development in a lot of countries. But you look at some of the, I'm not going to go through all this whole table here for you, but just look at some of the numbers up here and see what we're looking at. Municipal grade water, $1 to just over a dollar per cubic meter, whereas a ward road they're paying 3 cents. Why? Because infrastructure is such that they can do that. They have better water facilities. So the question comes up is, what can we do? Is there an opportunity here? Is there an opportunity in terms of a market opportunity to build and develop a technology that allows us to provide better water for less money in these areas? And guess what? If you can do that, guess who's going to help pay that? The Indian government will.
Okay. So municipal drinking water is that a private water source?
You know, that I don't know. It's probably by the government, I suspect. Because one of the major problems that India has is that there's such a huge bureaucracy with a lot of the public utility kinds of things. And it's very difficult with respect to power, electrical power, water, those kinds of things.
But it's more to the direct cost of getting water out.
Yes, right. And that's a very critical question you're asking, too. I mean, okay. Look at diarrhea medication, rice. Not that much difference there.
Okay.
But these are all market opportunities. And the reason why they're important is because from a BAM perspective, guess what it allows you to do? It allows you to share your life. Right? We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Okay, next slide.
The diarrhea medication is linked to the water system.
Yes, right.
Bad water, more
right.
Diarrhea.
Right. And you think, if you go back page up twice, please. You would think that it would be less money, right? Because you're using more of it because you're buying more of it because of the demand. So the supply, right, marginal cost, marginal revenue, et cetera. But guess what? It's more money because people have no place else to go. It's like loan shark being a good pop. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, very good point. Okay, so how, another ball game here, new field of discussion. How do we deal with different value systems? This is something in marketing we have to do all the time because marketing involves strategic alliances, it deals with sales, it deals with advertising, it deals with supply chain management. Next slide. Different standards at home, here for example, United States versus over there. Oops. What happens if the standards there seem lower than they are here? What do you do about that? Okay. For example, we'll come back here. So there's two basic responses that we've come up with so far. Cultural relativism and ethical imperialism, or absolutism is what it's sometimes called. Next slide. Let's go most on cultural relativism. No culture's ethics are better than any others, right? You're all familiar with relativism, right? So let's pop this real quick. Next slide. The next point. The problem that runs into here is that there's no international right or wrong. So how do we determine any justness? Take bribery, for example. That's what everybody talks about, right? Bribery. So next slide. Denmark and Singapore, bribery is not tolerated at all. You'll be expelled. If you're a foreigner, you're expelled. It actually probably came you in Singapore first, then they'll expel you. Okay. In Denmark, you simply aren't worth it. It's a very serious deal. Indonesia and Belgium, on the other hand, don't care. They look the other way. Just that's the way of doing business. Okay. In Belgium, insider trading is like everybody does it. So what's the problem? Now, the problem that comes up is, what about issues that are larger than bribery? That's a real issue. Like Nigeria, about 15, 20 years ago, some European companies were looking to get rid of toxic waste. Nigeria said, we'll take it, no problem. We're talking about, I can't pronounce it, some very, very toxic chemicals, and they shipped them over to Nigeria. And Nigerian workers in basically t-shirts and shorts were offloading these drums from ships to trucks and trucking them out and then doing stuff with them. Totally, you know. And the government was the one who said, we'll take care of it, we'll deal with it. The people, notwithstanding, don't really care. How do you deal with that? Okay. As a Christian, how do we deal with that? I mean, is that something that we really would want to be involved with? The answer, of course, is no. But how do you work with a government that doesn't care about its people? Next one. Then we have Sevastopol in Russia. About 15 years ago, a group of investors in New York decided they wanted to resurrect the SS United States, which was a luxury cruise liner. And they did some estimates, and they got some bids, and it was going to cost about $100 million to restitute this ship. The number one firm, which is American firm, said it'll cost about $100 million because of all the toxic, there's a lot of lead paint, there's a lot of asbestos, a lot of things are just very toxic in there. Sevastopol wanted the job. They bid $2 million. The company there didn't care about the workers. So guess what? The ship got pulled over to Sevastopol. Now the question here is, is that something that you would do? That's a different culture, right? It's more than bribery, right? A little heavier than bribery. Next slide. So what ends up happening is cultural relativism becomes blind. Whatever is, and you know, who am I to say, you know, they probably need the money. Now, the executive VAs I've dealt with in Central, mainly in South America, Brazil, Venezuela, Argentina, they laugh at us up here, at least the ones I've worked with. They laugh at us in terms of quality of life. You know, smoke pollution, for example, smog, and you know, air pollution, and eye pollution, etc. Because they say, you know, we can't afford that luxury. Well, what do you mean you can't afford that luxury? We can't afford the luxury of letting people's quality of life impinge the potential of increasing the standard of life, standard of living. Once we get to where you are, the United States is, or somewhere near that level, then we'll start worrying about the quality of life issues. That's a BAM issue. Okay. How do we deal with that from a holistic and incarnational standpoint? Okay. Then we move on to ethical imperialism. Okay. It's other than the spectrum. Okay, other than the spectrum. Okay, next. Here we go. It directs us to do everywhere what we do at home. That is, our ethics that we do here go there as well. Irrespective of the culture we're working with. Okay. There's three problems. The first one is that it clashes with the belief that different cultural traditions must be respected. Now, whether or not you agree with the cultural traditions is irrelevant. It still needs to be respected. Second, expresses moral truth using only one set of concepts, which is where sometimes we as Christians have some problems with. I'll come back in a few minutes. And the belief in a global standard of ethical behavior. That creates a lot of problems for people. And this is where we've had a lot of problems in emissions context to some extent. We'll come back to the next slide. Question four. So what has this to do with my being a Christian in marketing trying to impact the kingdom of Christ? Okay, so now I'm trying to tie this together in terms of the things we talked about. All right, next slide. Well, I think there's an incarnational approach. If we look at how many of you are at secular universities? Just have an idea. Okay, how many of you are at Christian universities? And those of you aren't in university at all? Okay, just curious. See if you guys are awake or not. Well, at Biola is rather interesting. It's an evangelical Christian university. Every undergrad is required to take 30 units of Bible. Okay. Everybody. Undergrads. So not the graduates, undergrads. Okay. So one of the things we find, if you take theology, if you go to Christian university and take some Bible or theology classes, or even in your church environment, same thing. Christians, we have incarnational theology. All right, next slide. We have here basically that God comes to us where we are, right? Is that Jesus came? You all heard that the ant parable, right? You know, this is a favorite pastor story. Where The ants, I forget the exact how it really works, but basically the ants are having some problems, and so this farmer is trying to figure out, okay, how can I get the ants to not do what they're doing, because they're getting messed up. And he finally figured out, well, if I could become an ant and go to them and tell them what they're doing wrong and how they could change things, they'd be saved. This is basically the parallel in terms of God sending Jesus, right? Incarnation. So what we have here is that God comes to us where we are, doing what we are. We have Jesus, his parables, right? The miracles. I mean, Jesus did not come as a priest, did he? Did he come as a rabbi? Did he come as a Pharisee or a Sadducee? What did he come as? He was a carpenter, right? He did that for, what do you think, maybe 20 years? Worked under his dad. Then at 30, he started public ministry. Moved to a seminary, didn't write articles, didn't get tenure. Okay. Didn't start a company and become a venture capitalist and then made millions of dollars or shekels in this case. Then now he's out. What did he do? You got 12 guys. And what did you do with them? Disciple. So what do you do? And disciple means what? Basically. It's building a relationship. Right? How many of you were saved at a Billy Graham crusade? How many of you were saved at a Lewis Block crusade? Or any crusade of a mass number? Anyone here saved on a television crusade or a television evangelist? Radio evangelist? No? How many of you were saved by an individual sharing their life with you and basically meeting you where you were, cared about you, talked to you, right? Most of us fit in that category? So in marketing, we're talking about here, it's just about the customer relationship management. It's coming back to listening to the customer. It gets back to knowing who your customer is. We're talking about the whole customer, not just simply the person who buys chewing gum from you. We're looking at as Christians, we're looking at ways to go in the marketplace, do things differently possibly, that's going to allow us an impact for Christ in the kingdom. And we're going to do that by knowing who people are. Let me give you two American examples. I really couldn't find any international examples. But how many of you are familiar with the game Cranium? Right? Okay. The first 1,000,000 copies of Cranium were sold without any advertising. Without any marketing other than salesmanship. And what the two guys who invented Cranium did was they went to Starbucks and stores like Starbucks basically, they decided who their customer was going to be, went to stores that those customers attracted, and sold it through those stores. They didn't go to Toys R Us first. They didn't go to Walmart or Target or Target if they're anti-Walmart. They didn't go there at all. What they did was they determined what kind of customer they thought was going to buy their product, went there first. They knew their customer well, and guess what? They were very, very successful. Another example that the guy's first name escaped me. I was walking over here, running through my mind these examples. I realized I forgot the guy's first name, but Jones Soda. You guys seen the store? I can't think of his first name. Anybody remember what it is? No. Anyway, Jones Soda has never used marketing, advertising, promotion at all ever. Phenomenally successful. What did he do? Decided that he wanted to do was he wanted to sell it to a certain kind of customer, an edgy customer, people who are on the fringe, high school guys in particular, wear tattoos, motorcycles, surfboarders, skateboards. I'm not saying those people are all edgy and off the edge. I'm just saying that's where he's going towards. Became so successful that it's now sold. You can almost anywhere now buy it, any grocery store. my point here, and then of course, these guys, I'm sure, aren't Christians. I have no idea if they're Christians or not. That's not the point. The point is that they were able to go outside. They were a little maverick about their approach to the marketplace, develop a relationship with the kind of consumer they really wanted to go after, and became very successful at it. And what I'm suggesting to you, in terms of whether we're dealing with the poor, or we're dealing with middle class, or with anybody, is we need to know who that customer is. We need to know who we're working with. Because as was mentioned earlier tonight with Jeff and Jeff Van Druser and Bill Pollard, is it's basically about whole life. Okay. This marketplace ministry, business mission, business ministry, workplace, whatever you want to call it. I mean, there's variations. Did you guys read the Rundle Johnson? You guys read that? I'm sorry, yeah, no, Johnson Rundle on what business ministry, business mission. Okay, you'll probably get to be in the copy in shortly. But they talk about what the differences are. But the point is that when we come to the job, when we come to the marketplace as Christians, we can't separate out who we are as people. I mean, one of the classic stories is about the woman who's a pension fund manager and was asked, would you invest in this company? And she says, do you mean as a pension fund manager or as an individual? I don't remember what the context was, but the implication was that, well, I have personal problems with this company because of some of the things they do socially, but from an investment standpoint, for my people who I invest for, I would invest for because I can't make that assessment for them. That's not my job. My job is to increase their revenue, increase their pension earnings. Well, my question to you is whether you're in marketing or if you're in production or if you're in science or if you're in engineering, if you're in communications, whatever it is how are you going to do that as a Christian? Are you still going to go Monday through Friday? You're a Christian on Sunday and Wednesday nights, right? You have church on Sunday morning, you have Bible study on Wednesday nights, and you know you have a few conversations during the week with your buddies, okay, or your spouse. But it's more than that. Okay. Next slide. So God is about coming alive in specific places where we are. And not just on Sunday mornings, not on Saturday evenings, depending upon where you go to church. A lot of Protestant churches now are having service on Saturday evenings because it helps alleviate the crowd on Sunday mornings. Yeah. It comes to work. Whether we are a doctor or if an engineer, I almost introduced myself as tonight, guys. I didn't do it for a variety of reasons, but mainly I forgot. My name is Tom Buckles, and I'm the servant of Jesus Christ disguised as a professor today. Because that's basically who I am. I'm a servant of the King, and what I do right now is I'm an academic, primarily. I do consulting, but that's my disguise right now. One of my major clients is a very strong Jewish fellow. Worked in kibbutz for 16 years, came back to the States, worked his way up from being an engineer, or a mechanic, actually, in a company. He now owns the company. About $18-20 million company. Okay. Now, the guy and I were both strong Christians. We're actually doing some consulting for this guy. And he knows we're Christians, and we know he's Jewish. I sent him a Hanukkah card because, as you know, I don't know Hanukkah is last week, right? Surprisingly, the day that's out of me. I didn't send it to him other than the fact that he's become a friend, basically, and I thought he's Jewish, I'll send him a Hanukkah card. He said most of his Jewish clients will send him a Hanukkah card, much less some Christian guys send a Hanukkah card. Okay. Ken Humphreys will tell you, who's a sales marketing guy, will tell you that he's actually had tremendous ministry with a number of his colleagues. He's now out of sales and marketing, full time, basically FCCI. Access Christ at Work, which he's doing Christ at Work now. But tremendous ministry to a lot of his Jewish competitors because they know he's a Christian and they know that he cares about them. If you go to the Middle East, they will tell you they'd rather deal with you than a Muslim or a Jew because they can trust Christians. They can't trust Muslims, they can't trust Jews. Now, I don't know how true that is, but that's what they'll tell you. Christians, when they say they're going to do something, they'll do it. They say it's going to be done a certain day, it'll be done a certain day, or they'll tell them why it's not. Okay? There's a relationship there. Tremendous opportunity for ministry. Okay. Excellent. You know, John, I will almost make time. John 1 talks about God who tabernacles among us. Okay, with us. Excellent. So in BAM, going where Christ is unknown and using business as a means of transformation. That is what we're trying to do, is enabling God with us. When we're in the marketplace, when we're in the workplace, when we're whatever we're doing, our Christian part of us hopefully is enabling God to be with us there with whoever we're working with. I would challenge you before school starts in a week or two for you, sometime to do a word study on the word Abadoh. A-B-A-D-O-H. Hebrew word, and it's used, has two meanings, work and worship. That is, your work is worship and your worship is work. There is no separation. That's the incarnation. And that's why we talk about this strategies, marketing. Why I first was going to put this together, I was asked to do this about a month ago, sort of a semi-last minute, because I really wanted to get somebody to do this, but they couldn't find anybody, and, you know, I guess I was the last resort. No, I don't know. But the point is that I was talking about, okay, well, we could do screaming and penetration price strategies, and we could talk about supply chain, we could do this, and disintermediation. I thought, you know, those are tactics. Those really, that specific tool we can use. And you know what? It doesn't really matter what context we're in, because we'll use a tool or not. That doesn't make it a Christian tool or not. It simply is. What makes it different as Christians is this incarnation stuff. Okay? Who is it we bring when we're doing the work to the kingdom? Okay? Next slide. How are we doing time-wise? How are you doing time-wise? 8:30? Okay.
About 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so what are the most important strategic tools I need to know how to use? So I'm going to just spend a couple minutes on this. Next slide. There's only really one tool. And I'm a little embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to some extent, sure, how simple it is, but it's also very difficult. It's prayer. I'm dead serious about that. About a month ago, I had lunch, not just me, it was about 50 of us, had lunch. At Viola, we have a guest speaker series, a presidential speaker series. The president of the university brings in a special guy. About every 4 to 6 weeks, we have lunch, he speaks. This guy was the John Lloyd Ogilvy speaker for 3 or 4 days. And he's currently the president of Southern Baptist Seminary. I don't know if there's a name to it, but that's what he does. He gave an incredibly startling statistic. The average evangelical Christian spends about an hour a year in quiet time. Think about that for a minute. That just blew me away. I had no idea where the data came from. I had no idea. Anyway, I just you said it. Okay, and this is sort of the thing you talked about. What's prayer really all about? Listening. More than talking. When we talked about the very beginning, or I talked about the very beginning, it's knowing your customers are and listening to your customers. Spending concentrated time. All of you read about heroes of the faith. Okay? And what most of those heroes have done? Spent tremendous amounts of time in prayer. Right? And I'm here to say, I'm one of the chief, you know, I could use a lot more prayer in my life. I'm not here to say that I spend, you know, an hour and a half every morning and an hour and a half every night in prayer. I don't do that. I should, but I don't. I'd probably fall asleep after about 20 minutes if I try to do that. Okay. Anybody ever done a retreat and the first thing you do is, you know, first retreat, the first thing you do is start sleeping a lot? Retreat leaders will tell you that's usually what happens to most busy people, figure, because they're so hot wired, they're so busy, they all of a sudden let down, bingo, they start falling asleep, they get more rest all of a sudden. Okay. It's not being slain in the spirit, it's being asleep. Okay. So that's what I really try, really want to leave you with, is I really want to challenge you, as you look at this business mission perspective in your own life, whether it's marketing, you can be an engineer, you can be a nurse, a doctor, it doesn't matter what it is, you're basically in ministry, you're basically in the mission field. But your degree of effectiveness, your ability to go outside the box, your ability to really understand the impact it can have is going to be a result of how well you are, how much you are in prayer, how well you're able to listen. If you look at the Great Awakenings in the United States, the major revivals in Europe, guess what? Very, 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 very few of them started in churches. Most of them started with business people, believe it or not. Okay. Go back and take a look. Read some of J. Edwin Orr's stuff and some other books. Okay. Next slide. Okay. Let's go forward. Just we'll come back to this one. Here's some resources. It's a great book. Joe Baracco at Harvard wrote this book called Leading Quietly, An Orthodox Guide to Doing the Right Thing. I don't believe he's a Christian. I just don't know. But this is incredibly powerful. Maybe for you guys who are MBAs in particular, those of you, anybody who has significant work experience as a manager, this book is incredibly powerful. Because what he does, he talks about how is it as a manager, can you do the right thing? And what is the right thing? Because guess what? It's very difficult to do the right thing. Okay. Integrity by Henry Cloud. Are you guys familiar with Henry Cloud, the boundaries guy? He and John Townsend. Integrity, the courage of the demands of reality. Business's crossover book to the popular business press. He's got 20 years of organizational development consulting with major corporations. He's a psychologist, psychotherapist. Wall Street Journal has said this is the best book in the 20 years on ethics in the marketplace, the workplace. It's not blatantly Christian, but you definitely will see the Christian undertones there. Wayne Grudem, Business for the Glory of God. Wayne Grudem is a systematic theologian. About 5 years ago, decided that he really wanted to spend some time. The next 10 years, basically, he's got five. I just spoke to him this summer about a couple of things. And he says he's got 4 more years or 5 more years to go. But he's really looking at how can business and theology work together, because basically business is where it's at. That's what the mission field is. Okay. You probably heard the quote from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. The biggest mission field today is the workplace. Okay. Great. This is a very good way. Wayne's done a really good job there. You guys read Why the Rest Hates the West? You familiar with that book?
It's the abandoned book of the day today.
Is that right?
Everybody can buy it.
Oh, yeah, it's $5. Yeah, I encourage you to buy it. Mike Pierce, it's M-E-I-C. It's not M-I-K-E, but it's a great book. I really suggest you take a look at it. One reason why they hate us so much in the Middle East, MTV. Serious. MTV is everywhere in the world. There was a study done about 5 years ago. No, it was six now. Almost 07, about 10 years ago now. You can go to any place in the world that is MTV, and you will find the average 13, 14, 15-year-old bedroom will be basically the same. You'll have different sports stars or rock stars on there, but because it'll be cultural to the nation, but same. Okay. And then my colleagues, Steve Rundle and Tom Steffen. Steve and I in the business school, and Tom Steffen is in the School of Intercultural Studies, is an anthropologist on Great Commission Companies. Great, really good book there. Again, you can buy it for $10 right now here. I'm not trying to plug IV Press, but what's really nice about this book in particular is the first four or five chapters are about some, not only say theory, but some basic major issues. And the last four or five chapters give you case examples of companies. Okay, Dwight Nordstrom, who's here, his company's in there, and this 4 or 5 books. Okay. And I think the next one more slide. Oh, and that's just my contact information. Okay, any I want to leave a few minutes for any other Q&A or any questions? Yeah.
I'm a bit confused. You were saying earlier that you didn't really understand the consumer to understand the marketing strategies that you deploy. But how is that any different from being a good marketer to begin with? Like, how do people know?
It's not.
So how is Claude glorified? How are we being, how are you applying on those offers?
I'm
just a bit confused because you were saying earlier that the whole point of the basis of business ambitions and marketing is to understand the consumer. But I would say that all good marketers know their consumer. So how is it any different being a Christian applying business ambitions in your workplace as a marketer? And how do other people know that? How do you know that? How do you glorify God in your marketing initiatives?
Sure. Well, first of all, most marketers don't know that and don't do that.
Okay.
Don't know who the customers are and don't do a good job doing that. But that aside, okay, it's the purpose. Okay. That is, what is the motivation behind why I do what I do? Is the reason why I do what I do is so I can get a bigger bonus? Is it so I can have a bigger plaque on my wall? Or is it because I'm really doing what I'm doing to give glory to God? Okay. And what do I do with the resources that are available to me? That's the business mission. The idea is that, and the other thing is that we look at our whole life as very different because we are all of a sudden making tough choices. That's why I spent a few minutes about values and about ethics. Because, believe it or not, it's very difficult. It's very easy. I mean, when you're 19, 20, 21, 22, 24 years old, you really don't have, it's very difficult to have a concept of how difficult decisions are when all of a sudden you're 30 years old, you have a child, and your wife has decided, let's say you're male, okay, and your wife's decided to stay home, and so you're the major breadwinner, and you're hit with a decision. I'll give you an example. A good friend of mine is a Christian. I went to college with him. Stockbroker guy. And he was asked to do something that's illegal. Because the customer's always right. And Bob said, the customer isn't always right. This is illegal. I can't do that. Two kids. The breadwinner at home. He resigned. He said, I won't do it. And I'll resign. He said, that's good because I'll fire you otherwise. That's a tough issue. That's what we're talking about here, really, in terms of the ideas. And guess what? This is a large local firm in a metropolitan area. And Charles Schwab heard about it and wanted to move into Arizona and called him up and said, we'd like to meet with you. We heard what you did. And we would like to talk to you about opening a branch in Tucson. And then Phoenix and move up from there. And he's had tremendous impact since then. I think that's what we're talking about, really. I mean, we're not talking about the fact that what you do as a marketer is necessarily building the kingdom. It may be, but it's a relationship you're having. It's an incarnational theology, an incarnational impact you're having on people's lives. That's what we're talking about. Okay. So it's a great question. You're absolutely right. There is no difference, John. I mean, what's the difference between somebody who's a football player, a baseball player, and one who's a Christian baseball player or a Christian football player? They both play football and baseball. We'll start, right? Somebody else? Yes, I know we're running short of time. I want to get you guys out of here. Yeah.
We talked a lot about.
Hold on 1 second.
You did. Oh. Microphone.
Two key points: talk about knowing your customers and listening to them. If we look at that in an international context, and any of us were to go overseas and work with either startups or microfinancing or what have you, have you seen some things that work really well for obtaining that information and knowing customers in a different cultural context?
You really want to learn cultural values. You really want to understand. And you would really do well. I mean, this is one of the things that missiologists have, I think, over business people, is they really take a look at context a lot. The difficulty is business people have a tendency, American business people, we're linear. Our idea of getting from point A to point B as quickly as we can is the most important thing. Okay. If you go to the Middle East, for example, they aren't linear. Okay, they're more Eastern. okay, in terms of their world, in terms of their cultural mindset. And so what they'll do is they'll call a loop. Okay. They'll start talk to you and say, how you doing? Yes, we'll talk about this job. Okay, yes, the contract. So, oh, by the way, how's your wife's operation doing? Oh, well, you talk about some personal stuff, and then they say, you're back on talking about the project again, and it's, my brother came by the other day, wanted to know about this, and then the loop, okay? And then versus America going, let's get to the thing, okay? Now, a friend of mine, for example, works a lot with Japanese, and what he's determined, what he's learned now, is that he always tells, now this is he's not a Christian, he goes to church, but I wouldn't call him an evangelical Christian, okay? I'm not sure where he is, but I wouldn't say that. But he does, he plays gamesmanship, and it's a Japanese thing. He tells them he's going home a day or two earlier than he really is. And the reason why is because they will always talk price to him as they're driving to the airport. Because they know that he has to make the sale to get his quota, to get his bonus. They figure he's going to sit. So he's going to the airport and with them. They'll say, well, how about this? He goes, that's a really good point. You know what? I'm going to postpone my drive. I'm going to stay close. This is really important. That's a really good point. Let's talk about that some more. He has no intention of leaving that day. Because it's a gamemanship with the Japanese. Okay? When you know they're really serious when they start talking price and money. So part of simply learning those kind of, and how do you do that? Lots of it being there and going there. And experiencing immersion, basically. And taking good courses. Most American companies do not train people to do global business. You get a half a day. You bow, you get a business card thing, okay, you take your shoes off, you walk inside of his house, okay, fine. You have spatial differences, but that gets you started. But that's not anywhere near enough.
Thanks, Tom. That was awesome. Let's give Tom a round of applause.